Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For obvious reasons, we keep this place as gloomy as possible.
Welcome to Mind Poppers Podcast.
We are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies.
Once you get used to these grim surroundings, you'll never leave. Nobody ever does.
We continue now with tonight's case, Conspiracy.
Now, listen.
Okay, I'm recording. Okay. Welcome back, everybody, to the Mind Poppers podcast. It has been a minute. It's been 2 weeks. We have been on a brief hiatus. We won't go into it. I am joined once again by friend of the pod, Jenny Claffey. Jenny, how are you doing today?
Hi, Adam. I'm glad you phoned me in. And I woke you up from your depression nap.
Nothing will wake me up from that nap.
How come you haven't put out a podcast in 2 weeks?
Do you know what? I was just feeling very uninspired. And
I get that.
Yeah. I could have came on and delivered something, but I was like, if I'm not enjoying it, then I know that it's not going to be enjoyable to listen to.
True.
Well, no.
Especially...
That's not true. Like, it would be enjoyable. You know? Like,
for sure. Yeah, true.
For sure. People would eat it up. But if I'm not enjoying it, then I'm not doing it. You know?
Yeah. I get that.
I needed to call you in to ease me back into it.
Well, yeah, solo podcast, I could never, truly.
It's a lot. Wait, now, will I take a picture of us on my Fuji Max Insta thing?
Okay.
Okay, wait, now, let me make sure the flash isn't on. Okay, smile. Wait, I better hold it down a little. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
No, we wait 40 minutes. So loud. You know what is interesting? Okay, so before we get into it, we have a lot on the docket this week, but have you seen that the Friends cast, so that thing on HBO Max streaming service, they're coming up with this reunion soon?
Mm-hmm.
Are you into Friends?
I'm not like a Friends stan, but I do enjoy Friends. I think like anyone from my generation kind of grew up on it, you know. I've obviously seen every episode of Friends, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be like an avid rewatcher. But the whole like relaunch series gives me like, I mean, I'm not really into a reunion. I know everyone really wanted a Friends reunion though, and I get the want for it, but I kind of feel it came from a place of like, damage control, because they were getting so much bad press for being like so quote unquote problematic as a show, because there was mm-hmm. loads of like, I mean, things that were very of its time in the 90s, but I'm kind of like, oh, I'm kind of dreading the like overly kind of done wokeification of Friends, which is like, ugh, you know.
Now, it was never too bad when it went problematic.
No, it wasn't.
It was never... but you see, the thing is, well, first of all, I was raised on Friends when mm-hmm. I was younger. Like, my parents loved it. But I had actually gotten all the DVDs when I was younger, like when I was like, what, like 10 years old. And I just used to just watch them every single night. It's what I used to fall asleep to. It's just what I used to consume. So I have this like connection with it. But the issue is, oh, actually, as well, somebody... last time they had left a comment on the last episode of the podcast, and they were like, really enjoying the episode, but what is the story with you swallowing so much? Don't you swallow right into the mic.
I will swallow all day into that microphone. I mean, sorry for making mouth noises while I like...
We'll
literally use my
mouth.
I mean, if the mic wasn't like strong enough, they'd be complaining about not being able to hear enough. 100%. I mean, it sounds like they have a phobia.
Yeah, well, like, and that's fair enough.
Heal yourself to ASMR, sweetie.
My issue with the Friends thing, okay, is look, I'm all about it. I'm all about it.
I would happy I'll to watch see it.
Yeah, I'll watch it. But the thing is, they have never, HBO, they've never established or made it clear if this is going to be a limited time episode, a limited time series, or if this is literally going to be a look back. So I have a feeling that it's actually not going to be a new series at all, but it's going to be the Friends, all the actors, the six cast together again. And they're just going to be like kind of taking a trip down memory lane. So I don't think there's going to be any scenes or anything like that.
Oh, really? Yeah. You think it's just going to be like, remember when we filmed this scene?
Literally, because it's their 20-year anniversary.
Okay, let's play a game. I'll guess your favorite Friends character and you guess mine.
Okay, but can we do favorite girl and favorite boy?
No, character.
Okay, okay.
Like if you were to, you know, pull one from a burning fire.
Well, I have two that I think are going to be for you, and they're the same two for me.
Really? Okay. Yeah. You guess mine first. Oh, okay. No, well, I guess you're first, actually, because you said they're the same. Okay. I guess that your favorite is Phoebe.
That is correct.
Ah, I knew it!
Now, you see, I would have said that your favorite is Phoebe or Chandler.
Oh, no. Nothing of the sort.
No? Monica, maybe?
My favorite's Ross. Ross is like my fucking, he is like the funniest fucking character. Like obviously in the first few seasons, like pathetic, but like as that show goes on, like all of the funniest episodes involve Ross, his storylines, his like, I love a good neurotic.
Mm-hmm. 100%. You know? I totally agree.
I mean, like, I'm a big Larry David fan. So, like, anything along those lines of, like, insane neuroses, I love it. I don't like Chandler, though, at all.
Really?
Like, again, earlier seasons, he's good. I don't like him in the later seasons. I enjoy Phoebe.
When he was in the midst of his pill addiction, he was at the top of his game.
He was. Troubled artist, you know. He was at his funniest then, and I do enjoy Monica a lot though. I'm a Geller fan, but I have to say Ross for me is just like,
I think it was just the perfect cast. And when they were getting together filming, and I'm not going to like make this a Friend podcast, I'm going to move on quickly, but in the beginning when they had all been cast, the director had sent them all on a trip to Las Vegas before they ever started filming, and they were like, right, gave them all a couple hundred dollars and was like, use this time to bond and form friendship and build on it so that when we start filming you'll all have some sort of connection already.
Oh my God, that's unreal. I never knew that happened.
Mm-hmm. So they announced, I think it was yesterday, they have this big guest of celebrity guests that are going to appear on this whatever, I'm not sure what we're going to get, episode whatever. We have Justin Bieber, which I don't want his rotten little trotters anywhere near the Friends universe. But we also have Lady Gaga.
No way, really?
Lady Gaga meets the Friends universe. I'm into that, I can tell you.
I'm into that because she's a New Yorker. She's of a similar, you know, slightly younger, obviously, generation, but like she would have been like in her teen years, I guess-ish, right? When she was like watching Friends. She gets the universe. Justin Bieber, no. And also she's an actress. I don't like it when, the reason I like, I was so proud of Lady Gaga and A Star Is Born is because even though I'm such a huge fan of hers, like I actually did forget she was Gaga in the movie. Like she was, she was like the character, you know what I mean? She wasn't like, because even in like an American, American Horror Story, she was Gaga, but like she was kind of meant to be Gaga. So that was forgivable, you know, but I was afraid that it was just going to be like Gaga in A Star Is Born. Then I'm like, I've no interest in that. And like someone like Justin Bieber, I can never not see Justin Bieber. I'm the same with Julia Roberts. Any film, I love Julia Roberts. But any film she's in, she's just Julia Roberts to me. She's never like a character. You know what I mean? Like, Erin Brockovich, maybe.
Erin Brockovich is incredible. Yeah. It's incredible. Incredible filming.
She's really good in that.
But then again, Erin Brockovich, then the role that she's playing is almost quite similar to the role she plays in the beginning of Pretty Woman.
Exactly. And then I watched a film with her recently called he's called The Mexican. It's like James Gandolfini's in it, amongst others, and she's just Julia Roberts in it, you know. But like, I mean, she's great in it.
Julia Roberts is someone who I've never met but would take a bullet for.
I Yeah.
There's just something about Julia Roberts, those big, that big, beautiful mouth. There's something.
The mouth is insane.
Mm-hmm. But the reason I was talking, yeah, so we have this whole start. There's actually more guests and good guests as well coming up in this Friends thing. But the only reason I had Friends on the brain, because I got into my head the other night, I wanted to Google how much the Friends cast are still making from Friends reruns, since it's, you know, being played on Comedy Central and Netflix bought it and now HBO Max. So they get, I think they're, each of the cast is entitled 2% of the, whatever you want to call it, the earnings that Friends is still bringing in. Yeah, the royalties. And that works out, apparently, that each cast member of Friends, all six of them every year, are getting in the check in the mail of 20 million in royalties.
And they're also, another thing that they did to keep their friendship really strong, which I just know from the episodes that Lindsay and I have done on my podcast called It Girls Podcast, check it out, about Sex and the City, because they were always compared, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. kind of generation, and like a huge reason that like the Sex and the City ladies ended up like kind of hating each other was because of money. But Friends always, they all made the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Same as U2 the band, a reason that they're all still friends and still making music. They split the money completely evenly, no matter who does what. Like, you know, no matter who,
deserve a penny.
Lindsay loves U2. She likes,
really? Oh, yeah. I hate. Now look, obviously there's a couple of songs that we all know and were raised with, that's fine. But I can't, especially, you know what really fucking pushed me over the edge with U2 is when they like fucking forced that album onto everyone's phone that year.
Yeah, it's like, just, you know, retire with some dignity.
Yeah, so I'm not doing that. I think,
but yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
But you see, HBO Max, we don't even fucking have that yet.
Oh, true.
That's, we'll be illegally streaming. What do you want to speak about next? Do you want to hit off, we can do Bill and Melinda, or we can hit off James Charles.
Oh, are we doing our mind popper?
Oh, yes. Who wants to go first? Do you want to go first? We each brought listeners. Yeah. I told Jenny to bring a mind popper to the show. I don't know what it is yet, and I have brought one as well, and Jenny doesn't know, and we'll discuss. Do you want to go first?
I'll go first. I took an artistic license with what a mind popper was. Because, okay, you know, why not? but I am going to discuss something called submechanophobia. Have you ever heard of it?
I've never heard of submechanophobia.
Okay, fantastic. I'm a member of this community. I'll say it loud and I'll say it proud.
No, now, let me try guess what it is from the
book. Yeah. Okay,
cool. So say it again.
Submechanophobia. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sub obviously being the Latin for under.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I presume it is. I don't know.
Don't you have that degree in Latin or whatever?
No, I have an English degree. I had to learn Latin when I was an altar boy. Brother Athanasius.
Are you okay?
obviously I'm thinking like mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Or machine. So submechanophobia, is it like the fear of being a machine, or fear of being in a like a false state of reality? Go on, fill me in.
Submechanophobia is a fear of submerged man-made objects, particularly underwater.
Okay. I saw James Cavanaugh share something with that on Twitter.
And I was the one who enlightened James Cavanaugh about this fear. Because we were talking one day, and I've always had this. I have this, like, it just gives me heebie-jeebies. Like, and it was actually another YouTube video that told me that it was a name. Because I would always be like, I don't know why, but I, like, can't look at bridges. Like, it just gives me, like, I mean, massive bridges, big structures. Right. And then I would also have this, like, gut-wrenching, like, skin-crawling reaction to seeing, like, whales underwater. Even though, like, I mean, I know whales are stunning, beautiful animals. You know, all the respect in the world for them.
I feel you on that.
I would get this like weird fear. I would always say to my brother when I was younger, I was like, do you ever get this fear of like you're swimming in the ocean and you're like, da 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 da. And then all of a sudden like the water beneath you gets darker and colder, and you're like, what is that? And then you notice it's this massive thing underneath you. And then I watched a YouTube video once, can't remember which one it was, but they started talking about this, and I was like, holy shit, I never realized I had that. And it's specifically man-made objects, because I would also get this, like, when I found out that, like, you know when people do, like, scuba diving to shipwrecks?
Mm-hmm.
I nearly jumped out of my body, like, when I found out that was a fucking thing. And it actually goes beyond, like, so many, like, it's like, there's people have different like aspects of it. So some people like really hate specifically like boats and like plane crashes, which I guess on a basic level you can kind of understand, or you can kind of be like, oh, is it like just this creepy thing? Because it's like, you know, for example, like the Titanic, this big catastrophe that was like now underwater and sitting there, and the same with like plane crashes. But then it kind of evolves also into there's also underwater museums around the world. Why the fuck?
And oh, I love who? That idea.
I hate it, and I often find myself Googling it. And just, you know, did you ever get that where you Google something you're terrified of, and you're like looking at it through your hands? It's like self-harm, but really addictive. And it's like me looking at those scary TikToks through my fingers on my phone.
Me too, me too. They turn the volume down.
Yeah. but then, yeah, it goes on to, so a lot of people are really afraid of them. They don't give me too much of the kind of heebie-jeebies, but they're kind of gross. But then a lot of people have this huge fear of the chains. You know when there's just chains floating mm-hmm. under the sea and they go all the way down to the bottom of the ocean? But for me, it would be the ships are my main one. That,
you know, it's like, because I totally get what you're saying. While at one point, seeing these things, like, say, a plane at the bottom of the ocean or whatever, it's endearing and it's fantastical and it's beautiful. Mm. But at the same time, it's this overwhelming sense for me of, you don't belong here. And then seeing something that is so unnatural to that environment just sitting yeah. there, it's like, oof, I do 100% feel that. And, as you know, the thing as well is, like, because it's like the deep blue, it's dark, and stumbling across it, it's this sense of, I 100% get what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. And so like there's that, and then like another aspect of it that really freaks me out. I remember the first time I ever got this fear, I was in, like, I actually remember it really imprinted on me. I was in geography class in like second year or third year, so I'm like 14 or whatever, and the teacher was like talking about like whatever ocean bullshit, like boring. I always hated geography. What a pointless subject. No offense to anyone who loves geography. I was just like, I thought geography was like, we're going to be going and exploring Africa.
Yeah.
It was like learning about limestone. I was like, mm-hmm, what the great. Fuck? I thought it was going to be like, every day we choose a different country and find out about all the fantastic aspects of the world.
And like learn about the dinosaurs, maybe go on an exhibition trip or whatever.
Yeah, but it was like learning about the four types of rock around the corner. I was like, God, this is boring. But anyway, she was talking about fucking the ocean, and then she was like, and then of course we have something called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is a range of mountains higher than Everest under the water. Anyway, moving on, and I was like, there are mountains under the water, the smallest of which is higher than us, our highest mountain. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is as well, it's like, it's a fact that we, and it's a scary fact, that we have explored more of outer space than we have of our own oceans.
5% of the ocean or something? Like the whole idea of the ocean, like, obviously fascinates me and it's like incredible, but it does terrify me. And one thing that, like, my biggest fear of all the submechanophobic imagery is there's this huge Jesus statue. You know the Jesus praying mm-hmm. like in Rio? There's one of them like submerged in the depths that people often dive with. And like the worst thing is when you kind of see it on its own, you're like, oh, creepy. But then when you see the little man and how small the little man is beside it, like, could you fucking imagine being like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna scuba dive? And I'm a confident swimmer, like, so it's not the fear of like drowning. Mm-hmm. I don't have any fear like that. But like being like, yay, and then you're like, oh, what's that down below? And then the instructor's like, come on, let's go explore. And you're like, okay. And then there's a face the size of your house. No, thank you. And it's made of concrete and it's been down there for millennia. I don't know. Probably not millennia.
But that's the thing. It's like this overwhelming sense of the unknown when it comes to the ocean. So I 100% feel that.
Yeah. What's your mind popper?
Well, I won't do mind popper yet. I'm going to save mine for a while. And I just hit off some basic stuff that we have on the docket. Okay, so first of all, Bill and Melinda Gates, they're getting divorced, which I don't really care about. But the interesting thing is, okay, so I'm reading reports that the marriage had fallen to the rocks. In 2019, Melinda was actually looking into filing for divorce because of Bill's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
I read this. I don't know if I buy it.
Go on.
It was an inside job. No, what I don't buy is that I don't buy that someone like Melinda Gates, who is an extremely like accomplished woman who has like great dealings in Microsoft. She is not just like a trophy wife or a stay at home. Like she is as involved in Microsoft as you can be. I don't believe that she didn't know how involved he was with Epstein. I think she just is like terrified of it being public.
You think that there could be some more stuff to come forward?
I think that she knew. I think there's always a lot of like, you know, there's always a certain way that like she's like a first lady, you know, she's like Bill Gates' wife. She's like the first lady of like tech, right? And there's always a certain way in which they are perceived, especially in America, I feel. And, it, you know, their public perception matters so much that I feel there's certain things, obviously, that are like so taboo. And obviously, Jeffrey Epstein is one of them. Even though I do think that anyone who hung out with him more than like two times knew exactly what he was about.
How could you not?
I think even if you're in the circle and you didn't know him, you would have heard things, right? Same as Harvey Weinstein. You know, I don't buy it for a second that no one heard the rumors. Like, it's like, no, okay, he wasn't exactly hiding it. So I think that Melinda Gates knew exactly whatever the fuck Bill Gates was doing with Epstein. And I, you know, and also on the record, I don't believe that anyone who was involved with Epstein was like also trafficking young girls. Like, I think that like, that was a part of his life, and some people could be involved in that, but I don't think that that necessarily means that you're a culprit, you know, that way. But I do think that in this day and age, any association with Epstein is such a fucking bad look, that Melinda Gates, who is also like this first lady, and as we know, all these kind of first ladies, like, you know, and whether you believe it or not is like entirely up to you, but like they love to kind of play into the, you know, women in power, especially in the tech world. It's just like women in tech, like we're breaking the glass ceiling. So I think that if she wants to further her career, being associated, or not even being associated with Bill Gates, but the perception of forgiving him for hanging out with Epstein, like would like halt her career so much. So I don't think it's necessarily that she's like, oh, my husband was flying on the jet with Epstein. And I don't think that it means that she knew all of his dodgy dealings, but I think it's more of a public perception thing that she's like, I can't be seen to be forgive this. Like, I could deal with it maybe when it was secret, but there's possibly more going to come out. Or even if not, I think just the mere like look of being involved with Epstein, people's minds go one place, right? And as I said, I don't believe that it means you had anything, you know, 100% had anything to do with like fucking, you know, half of the shit that he fucking was involved with. But I do think that it's like a really smart move on her behalf, to be honest. I've also heard a lot of people say that they think it's something to do with like the liquidation of assets.
I heard that.
Kind of thing, which is interesting when you look at people like Bezos also getting divorced this year. And he was very...
Yeah, what's going on there?
Well, he gave her half completely. And if you look at it from a liquidation of assets aspect, so if anyone doesn't know what that means, my understanding is that, you know, if you're a billionaire, it's your net worth. So it's like all your assets combined, you know, it doesn't mean that you've got $1 billion in cash in your bank account. But when you have a divorce, obviously your assets have to be split in half, especially if you have no prenup. So in order to do that, if the other party of the divorce is like, yeah, I want half, You have to liquefy all your assets. So sell your fucking shares or whatever, all your properties, sell them all and then divide in half. So you actually end up with more cash than you probably had before.
Yeah, because that's what word on the street is saying, that is possibly due to something about protecting assets or whatever. But it's weird that you said it, that the Bezos are breaking up, the Gates breaking up, Maura, Higgins and Chris are after breaking up.
You know, the Holy Trinity.
Maura cashing in her small Victoria's Secret assets. But I can't remember what I was going to say, but maybe she just is getting sick and tired of having sex with Bill Gates as well.
For sure. I get that.
And I 100% do not blame her on that.
No, he's punching for sure with her. He is punching. You know, it's always the way with these tech guys. They're cute and nerdy when they're like 22.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
They kind of have to do, like, I don't know if you're aware of Trent Reznor. He's in Nine Inch Nails. And like when he was like in his 20s, he was like this like rock, like, you know, so skinny and like that was hot in his 20s. But then he made the incredible executive decision that when he was like moving into his 40s, he got like really buff and now just looks kind of like an Italian American like bodyguard, you know. And that's how you go, you know, that way you do the skinny, yeah, like almost dying thing when you're young, mm-hmm. and then you get it together later on in life.
But then in age, they do revert back to that skinny nerd kind of a thing as well.
True. Very true.
Like they all, the tech guys always end up looking like someone's Jewish grandfather.
Yeah, they're Woody Allen.
Yeah, 100%. Now, speaking of child trafficking and child molestation, segueing from that to James Charles. So basically, for people who aren't aware, and we won't spend long on it, James Charles has gotten scrutiny again, I guess, a couple of months ago, because he's been texting some guy and it turns out that the guy was actually underage and I think James may have sent some inappropriate photos to him or whatever. My issue with this is, okay, and everyone's like, cancel James Charles, whatever. I don't care. I truly don't care about James Charles. But the thing is that, like, there's a history of these guys with James Charles when he is texting them or whatever, and then they like purposely go into it knowing that they're underage and often lie about their age and will like take screenshots of all the messages James sends and then like make a big viral TikTok video about it. Like, this has happened so many times.
Yeah, for sure. The James Charles thing for me is like nuanced. Like, I think if you're messaging people underage, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, so stupid, you know, like, I'm just like, that's just dumb. Even if you're not a, like, just to put that out there, you know, why the fuck are you doing that? That's wrong, gross, whatever. I disagree with the rhetoric around like calling him like a like pedophile. I'm kind of like, you can't, like, a pedophile is like specific to like prepubescent children and it's misleading and it's not endorsing what he did, but like to categorize someone as a pedophile when they were messaging someone who's 3 years younger than them, even if it is illegal, is, I think, a bit of it's insulting towards anyone who was like victim of
it takes
child abuse.
It like takes the power away from like the term pedophile.
Yeah. And like it has its own, like, it's wrong. It's illegal for a reason, but it is different. Again, illegal, but like, I find it kind of, it actually takes away from their argument, right? Because you're being so hyperbolic by using such, and it's also a term that's like, whoa, like that's like, you know, the pedos don't even last in prison. You know, that way, like, they're like bottom of the fucking barrel, no matter where you go. However, with him, I will say, like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you are so famous. Like, say even if he was like texting these guys, like, A, why are you using your Instagram explore page when you're like so fucking famous as like a dating website? Like, that's just it's just like counterintuitive to like your career, which you claim to be, you know, this big business person and like you care so much and you're so professional. It's like, okay, that's like the opposite of professional. Like, I wouldn't even, like, having a fan base, like, I wouldn't even, it'd be like me like going on my explore page and then like, I don't know, finding people who follow me. And like, he had this weird thing of like, when they followed him, he was like, ooh, you know, like me like following girls back and being like, hey, want to go out and like do a gram of coke? It's just like, what? Like, find people in your own circle.
Yes,
to do that way,
please.
But like, it's like, find people in your own circle to do that with. You know, that way, if you even just from a self-preservation point of view, like, why are you putting yourself out on the chopping board? You know, if there has been instances of all these guys
exactly.
making these
it's
fake
like, why
TikToks.
Why haven't you even learned by now? Why aren't you asking people for IDs and shit? 100%, I get it.
Yeah, like, or just use Grindr. Like, I don't, like, mm-hmm. and of course people can lie there as well. But like, you know, it looks even worse that you're like literally refreshing the Explore page for some young looking guy. He was also on Logan Paul's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Quoted being like, I'm not attracted to guys in their 20s. I will literally date the youngest possible. It's like, oh. He was like, I'm talking 16, 17. Like, bear in mind, the age of consent in America is 18. So it's like, you literally on
yeah.
the record. Like, and like, look, there is also things called Romeo and Juliet laws that are in place. I think it's like 5 years, 4 years, okay. depending on your age, where it's like, I know it's in Ireland. Sarah had told me about it, where like, so the age of consent here is 17, right? But like, say two people had sex and one was 16, one was 19. Like, there's a Romeo and Juliet law that says like, they give you like a few years of grace period where like, it's not, you can't like be like, you know, making like intense statutory rape charges if you don't want to, you know, that mm-hmm. way there's things in place that can protect you. However, like his texts are like sus. It's like,
mm-hmm.
like you're going immediately for the armpit hair picture.
Yeah. And he likes boys as well.
Yes. Yes. Which look, I know a lot of guys who like straight boys too, you know, that way, like, and I know a lot of straight boys who like, lads. You know, so I've heard it all from a lot of my friends, but like, you know, when you're that famous, it's kind of like, okay, let's move it on. Like,
and you know what, well, I heard the news yesterday that he's going to be demonetized permanently on YouTube which is big for him, because YouTube was like, I think it was estimated that he was pulling in like 2.3 million a year from YouTube.
He's huge on YouTube.
So that they did say a kick in the teeth.
It is, but they did, didn't they say that about Logan Paul too? And then true. I think he's back. I think, I'm not sure if like, I mean, yeah, it's weird because it's kind of, and I don't know the answer to it, because it's like, where do you draw the line? Like, if he's using Instagram to do this, do you punish him on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I get it, because it's like, YouTube is how he got his like acclaim and his audience. And if he's abusing that to like, be hitting on like underage people online, like, I don't know, it's kind of kangaroo court vibes, and I guess it's going to be something that we're going to see like over the next like 10 years. Like, I do find it interesting that like YouTube, which is like new kind of Hollywood, is like mirroring Hollywood but like mm-hmm. coming out way quicker. It's very strange. But
these,
I guess,
like YouTube predators.
And there's a lot of them. Like, there's ones that even I haven't heard their names of, but I've seen videos about them and I'm like, what?
Me too. Like, YouTube is a breeding ground of like little viral Epsteins.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it makes sense, especially with like his content, which is like geared towards, but I would presume it's geared towards like young girls. But
mm-hmm.
I guess, I mean, he does love a good catfishing moment too. You know, he loves to like lure them in.
And he's got money. He's got money. He's got power.
Mm-hmm. And he does give me bad vibes, I will say that.
He does. Do you know what the thing is? What gives me the worst vibes about James Charles is he doesn't drink or do any drugs.
Yeah.
That's, so someone who's doing that in like full of sobriety, that ain't right.
And like makes a song and a dance about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And like he, you know, is like, he just seems like a product of like that kind of YouTube-y young generation, and he always kind of gave me bad vibes. Like, I never fully warmed to him, truly. And I remember when all that shit went on with, like, I mean, and that's all been proven correct now, which is insane. Like, that whole, what Jeffree Star said, that he's like a predator, that he's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Like, there's rumors that he I think assaulted or attempted to assault Jeffree's ex-boyfriend Nathan's brother.
Oh, what's his name again? He's so hot. So good looking. Zach, so good looking.
And Nathan was so hot as well.
So
but
hot.
There was rumors that he like was like, and that's why he was banned from Jeffree Star's house.
Oh, I remember when Jeffree made those kind of hints towards that.
Yeah, and people kind of put two and two together that it was him, and there was rumors that, like, I think that a lot of the time, if there's enough smoke, you know, there's fire. And those kind of things that Tati was saying, you know, when he was like trying to lure in the straight boys and being like, I'm fucking famous. I'm like, I could totally hear him say that. Like, it did not sound
100%. No, it was did not sound far fetched by any.
No, no. And like, I don't find Tati likable.
No, I'm glad that she got her teeth kicked in by Jeffree and James. Truly.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that whole thing was a goddamn mess, but dear God, I lapped it up.
I just love when I see a thumbnail. I think her thumbnail was just Kathy was like, bye sisters.
Yeah, bye sisters.
That's so dramatic.
But yeah, I don't like, I think Trisha Paytas says it right when she talks about these kind of people being cancelled. She's like, look, they'll be fine. You know, she's like, no one is truly cancelled until you cancel yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Jenna Marbles showed us that. She was like, I'm taking myself off the damn internet, and she's gone. And I think, you know, there's been so many scandals of like every single YouTuber, herself included. And I think it's just like, just keep moving on. Even like, look at Logan Paul, who again, I don't find particularly likable, but like, that man filmed a dead body hanging from a tree. Like, mm-hmm. That's about as low as you can get, bar fucking soliciting nudes from underage people, you know, that way. And he kind of clawed himself back up, and he has his podcast now, and he seems to be
doing amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's going to be boxing Floyd Mayweather soon.
It's crazy. And like, so I think that the thing with James is like, just the repeated nature of it. Like, if Logan Paul kept doing that, it's like, what are you doing? You know, the way it's like, exactly. I can totally like forgive and forget people if like everyone fucks up online, especially when you're like grown up online. But I think like, it's like, I find that strange that he's continuously doing it, and that he is like, even when he's been kind of quiet recently, there's still been stuff coming out about him. I'm like, how are you that dumb that like so many people try catfish you, but you like, eat it up.
Mm-hmm. Eat it up. Well, you know what? That's men. That is men. Like, you see something that you like and you don't ask questions. It's terrible, but it's just where he got his.
What do you think will happen to him?
Nothing, really. Yeah. And I honestly truly don't care. I truly do not care anything about it. But, and you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like, you know, those like viral videos you see sometimes on Facebook and TikTok of like these, I guess they're like pedophile hunters, and they set up like a fake profile and we like try and like convince someone to meet up with them, like them kind of like, I don't know, like appearing as a, say, a young underage girl, and it could actually be a 40-year-old man. He's trying to get other men to meet up with this, you know, fake young girl, and then to be like, have the whole candid camera moment, like, oh, I got you, you fucking freak. And I'm like, why?
I know. Did you ever watch To Catch a Predator, what that's modeled off, the TV show? So good. That was fucking epic, that show.
I always, and I know, like, whatever, I always felt, when I see these videos, there's always a part of me that feels bad for the predator. You know, just seeing anyone getting caught on camera, public humiliation. I know what they're doing and probably are doing.
Yeah.
Privacy is wrong. I know that. But it's just a human instinct to me that I'm like, oh.
I know. There's a weird human instinct where you're like, oh God, like, what if they just like were really good at tricking them? But then I watched this show on Channel 4 and it was called like To Catch a Pedophile, I think. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it was so dark. It was basically that, but it was the, like, the prison, or not the prison, the police force that actually actively are trying to find these people. So they're mm-hmm. on Grindr, they're on all of these apps, and they have like really like specific ways of doing it. Like, they explicitly say their age very early on, all these kind of things, you know. So they're not trying to like, I guess they are trying to trick people, but they're not being like ambiguous. You know, like, they're like,
surely that has to fall into some sort of entrapment.
I mean, I guess, but then how else do you catch these people when they're doing something so secretive and so deplorable? Like, one guy was messaging someone who he believed was 13. Okay, so this is not like, mm-hmm. I'm 16. It's like a child. Mm-hmm. And they're
acting. I just flesh out of my confirmation.
Yes. And they're like, you know, he was talking to this girl and he rented this Airbnb, and then like they catch him like on the way to the Airbnb, and like they fully, it's so insane. Like they're like, he's in his black jacket, go get him. And like they all get him. And he had like cable ties in his bag and like a butt plug. And they were like, what's that for? And he was like, just in case she wanted to. It was like all of these sex toys. And it's like, okay, he was under the premise that this was a fucking real person. Imagine it was. Like, yeah. Imagine he didn't, like the Russian roulette of the internet, he didn't find the cop. He found the real girl. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry. Lock them up and throw away the key. See you later.
Agree. Now, interestingly enough, one of the ways you're saying, how would you catch them? Say, other than this kind of whatever, this kind of setup, this sting. Well, I was reading an article, I sent it to you the other day, about that there was this young fellow in Cork. I think I could be wrong. I can't remember his age, but it was between 25 and 35, maybe. I won't name him because I can't remember his name. But he was just in court because he'd been found using the dark web and had been found with child pornography. I think he only got charged in the end for like 3 photos of child pornography from the dark web. But I thought it was an interesting segue into, because I'm fascinated with the dark web, and I know that it's something that you are interested in as well. So just to give it a breakdown for the listeners, I won't go too tech heavy into it at all because I don't know the tech behind it. But basically, the dark web is this place that exists within the internet as we know it, where it's just a whole plethora of really dark things going on. It's where you buy all your illegal substances, children, rape, murder, all of this kind of shit. So basically, I'll give you a rundown, and this is the easiest way I found out for me as well. So basically, and we're talking about the dark web, we can talk about the web in like 3 parts, okay? So we have, on the top layer is the surface web. So this is our Google. This is what we're using right now, what everyone's using to listen to this podcast. The surface web. It's our everyday shit. And that makes up only 4% of the internet, okay? So if we go from that, so we go a level below, we have the deep web. Now the deep web is 500 times bigger than the surface web. And the deep web basically is the part of the internet where all of our personal information is stored. So medical records, bank account details, that's the deep web. So if we go to the final layer, we finally reach the dark web. Now, the dark web is basically, there's this different like proxy servers set up all around the world that basically allows people to surf this dark net almost with 100% anonymity. So
yeah, it like bounces your VPN or something,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So you're so hard to trace. But the interesting thing, and I guess disappointing but not surprising thing, is that the dark web, okay, to access the dark web, you need to use this program called Tor, which is T-O-R, is short for the Onion Router, which basically is a software that lets you get past the surface web and the deep web down into the dark, the good stuff, the bad stuff, and the nasty stuff. So this was invented, this software, by the US government to allow spies to exchange information without other, you know, opposing parties being privy to that information. So this was created by the US military, I think it was actually the Navy, in the 1990s. And it was funded by the State Department, or the State Department and the Department of Defense. But then the US government leaked this software, or gave the software, whatever you want to call it, to the average Joe, to the Joe public. Meaning that now everybody who had access to a computer, and you don't need to be Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg to find out how the software works to get onto the dark web. Not at all. You can watch a YouTube tutorial and you'll be on the dark web, you know, in moments. So basically, I'll just give you, there's just a lot of different kind of things. I suppose we'll go into it in a second. I have a couple of interesting stories. But what are your opinions so far? We know, all right, everyone knows who's heard of the dark web, that a lot of, it's really where the beast lies. It's where all the terrible things happen. What are your thoughts on the US government providing that software to the world?
Oh, I mean, it's almost like the like my mind immediately goes to like, did they purposely leak it?
They had to, surely.
Like, how do you leak classified software that's so advanced and so, like, you knew that's Pandora's box, right?
100%.
You know, like, it's like, what are they going to do with that? Let me think. Sell drugs and people? Like, you know what I mean? They're not going to be like, let's set up Facebook 2.0.
Well, they have Black Book, which is the social media of the dark web.
The dark web fascinates me. It's kind of very similar to what we were talking about earlier with like submechanophobia. It's this like fear of what lies beneath, but like looking at it through my fingers on my phone. Like, I first became aware of the dark web when I started listening to podcasts, actually, and I was mad into my crime podcasts, as all of the mentally ill are, and I was listening to, I don't know if you ever listened to Sword and Scale. Do you ever listen to that podcast?
No, never heard of
that. It's like controversial in the sense that the guy who runs it is like kind of controversial, but he covers very like some really heinous crimes, and a lot of these would like inevitably root back to the dark web. And I think I just started looking into it. I always have this, like, when I think of Tor, even the name creeps me out. I don't know why, but it is that thing of like, do I want to go on? Yes, I do. But I would never, like, you know what I mean? But I'm like, I'm always like, I cannot believe that that's there to use. And, you know, what's recently kind of sparked my, like, I mean, what's the word? It's like fascination, I guess, you know, that way.
The morbid curiosity.
Yeah, it's not like admiration, but it's like, what the fuck is going on over there? Like, is, on TikTok, there's so much stuff about the dark web. I started getting, I mean, like, as you know, TikTok knows you better than you know yourself. So it's like serving me dark web videos, and it's serving me like people being like, here's what Tor looks like. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, and even the thoughts of like downloading Tor gives me such fear. Like, I'm like, it just gives me
feel like an FBI agent is going to be alerted.
Oh, they're like, bing, 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 Malahide. And
It was actually the FBI who contacted the Gardaí in relation to that case I was talking about earlier about that kid or that guy who was caught with child porn on his computer that he got off the dark web. It was actually the FBI who sourced that out and then contacted the Gardaí and was like, oh, heads up, this person, blah, blah, blah.
So obviously, yeah. Have you ever heard of the show, very niche, 21 Kids and Counting?
Yes, I have.
And have you seen what's going on over there recently with that family? Oh, my God, Adam. So, you know, Josh Duggar, the eldest brother of that family. If anyone doesn't know the show, it's a show about these fundamental Christians who have 21 kids.
Was it on TLC?
TLC, yes, a classic.
A lifetime.
But he has been found with apparently what has been named as one of the most heinous collections of child pornography that the unit that actually opened his computer and looked at the files has ever seen, ever. He was like part of I'm pretty sure it was a dark web chat room, where they're all swapping pictures constantly and like, you know, collecting them and swapping them, and they have like servers and all this shit. And he was arrested recently, and like when the police came into his place of work, which is like a car sales place, apparently, and this is like written in the report, so it's, you know, factual, I guess. They came in and they didn't say anything. And apparently he was like, oh, what's going on here? Has someone been downloading child porn?
With his hands in his pants.
Yeah, like, ooh! But yeah, like that's, you know, they are finding a lot of these people. There's huge chat rooms dedicated to this stuff, which is just so heinous. And I remember listening to a podcast as well about it. And, you know, this guy was saying, like, you know, as you said, Tor is just, you know, a matter of downloading that and a VPN, and you can pretty much go away and sail away and have fucking fun on the dark web. And I think there is a lot of like, not like regular stuff on the dark web, but there's also just like kind of, I don't know if you remember that website, rotten.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Is that where these like host all those like freaky videos?
And like you beheadings. Like
decapitation, yes.
There's also all of that lives on the dark web as well. Like there is stuff that like isn't just child pornography, and I mean, there's a lot of that as well. But there is stuff on there that like, so like basically what I'm saying is anyone who has the dark web is not necessarily
illegal. It's not a crime to go on to the dark web and surf the dark web.
And yeah, so this guy was saying, like, you know, he's like, you can get it. And he's like, just be very wary of what you click on, because once you click on it, you know, you might think you're as encrypted as it comes. But like, as we see, the FBI, and this goes back to the, like, was it an inside job, a publicly, a purposeful leak? They can track you down if you are doing enough heinous activity on.
Yeah, like you need to go in with the knowledge of how to, like, safeguard your computer and all that kind of shit. And people actually recommend often getting a brand new device if you're going onto the dark web, you know, with none of your personal files on a hard drive. Now, I there's just no telling me that the US government did not do this maliciously. I'm sorry, but I think the US government is one of the most evil entities to have ever existed. So there's just no way I don't believe that the US, like, they basically provided this underground place where the likes of pedophiles, drug pushers, all of this kind of stuff has a place to organize in secrecy and to communicate and to gather and to collect. Like, that has the US government's hands all over it, I've no doubt. And some of the things I've seen, like, I've seen videos of people going on buying firearms, buying ammunition, buying fucking rocket launchers. You can buy a you can buy submarines on the dark web. They have these things, okay, called red rooms on the dark web.
Oh, I had, that was the one note I had. I was like, I took one note. I just found out what red rooms were, but I'll let you take the wheel on this because I'm fascinated by them.
Well, basically all I know is basically it is like a pay-per-view service, like you'd pay for, you know, watching a McGregor fight. So they sell tickets and there's different red rooms for whatever, but basically, so you're buying tickets to enter into this live stream, and basically there's someone who's going to be getting raped or murder, you're watching, you're paying to see someone get raped, you're paying someone to get murdered or whatever. And it's like very niche. Like you can find like, okay, I want to, you know, an Indian man getting murdered, or a white woman getting raped, whatever. It's all this kind of, you know, very niche, children getting raped. Exactly. It is crazy.
And the darkest part about it, you know, is that apparently on the red rooms, which I've heard, is that they're like incredibly expensive. So they're geared towards very rich and powerful people. Your average Tor user. Now, again, maybe, you know, someone who got in, because again, you know, the dark web is linked inherently with cryptocurrency, because cryptocurrency, you know, was begun as a anonymous way, not begun, but it was actually used, should I say, as an anonymous way to like exchange funds. So if you think of Silk Road was probably the most famous website that existed on Tor. And Silk Road is a place where you could buy any drug, basically. Guns as well, and I think you could get hitmen on there, but it was mainly used. It's been since shut down. The guy who owned the website is in jail, I'm pretty sure. It was mainly used, and I know people who had, back then, like, they ordered Class A's.
Oh, I know people as well who have ordered coke off the dark web.
And which it's I respect.
I'm respecting the free trade drug market, you know? I'm respecting that. I can't remember the name of the website. One of the websites, I think it was Zakufo or something like that. I can't remember the name. It was something like that. That was one of the hitmen sites. There's another hitmen site called Easy Solutions, where paying someone to take a hit out on someone, to murder someone. Interestingly enough as well, they also had this site on the dark web. Can't remember the name, but it was like a stock exchange. So what you were doing was, it was like buying stocks, but buying stocks on people's lives. So basically you're buying stocks, and say if it basically creates reason for someone to go out and murder a specific person, it's a big payout if you have your money on this person getting murdered.
It's like you're shorting someone's life.
Literally. And it's not like necessarily like celebrities or whatever. It can be, but oftentimes it's you could have a hit out on you. You could be a person on this exchange and you would never know.
It just is the creepiest. It sounds like a fairy tale, you know, that way. Like, it sounds completely fake. It just sounds so beyond anything you can imagine. But the fact that, I mean, it's 100% true. And the Red Rooms, just to go back to them, like, that really creeps me out, like how geared towards extremely rich people they are. And as I said, with cryptocurrency, you know, of course, someone could be like an early adopter to cryptocurrency and have like 50 Bitcoins, bought them when they were like a tenner.
But
you know,
For
the most part, I do think that those Red Rooms are geared towards, I mean, sick individuals, point blank, but with a lot of money.
It's the rich and powerful. It's the 1%. I mean, it's not like Joe down the road is, you know, importing little girls for his sex ring. No, it's the likes of Epstein.
It's so dark. And I just reminded, this will give you a laugh. I think it was on a podcast with you. I said something about like Joe Biden is dark or something. And a gossip website that shall remain unnamed, I was sent screenshots of it where they were calling me like a QAnon truther because I said Joe Biden gave me dark energy. And I'm like, sweetie, he does not have to be involved in Pizzagate for me to get dark energy off him. His like simple, like, you know, puppeteering of the likes of Israel or bombing the Middle East. If that's not dark, like, I don't need like him to be like, you know, using Red Rooms on tour to be dark. Like, the reality oftentimes darker than the conspiracy.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, we might not know if Biden has any hand in the likes of Pizzagate or whatever, but we know what's dark about Biden that we can say for sure is that he was a warmonger. We can talk about his crime bill. We can talk about his, what you call it, like, have the frivolous of putting, say, certain oppressed people in positions in state, like transgender people or whatever, while at the same time then counteractively, you know, affecting their rights, you know, through the legal system. So we don't even have to get into conspiracy theories to know that Joe Biden is dark and is not someone that is deserving of your adoration and standing like some of your favorite fucking singer or athlete. So that
I know, I just, it gave me a laugh though. They're like, surely she's a QAnon truther. And now I'm sure they'll listen to this podcast and be like, I told you so. She thinks the Red Rooms are for the rich and powerful.
Well, no, they are. That's a fact. That is 100% a fact.
Who else is looking at that kind of ship?
Who else has the money?
Nothing else to do.
Who else has the money for that level of psychopathic voyeurism?
It's so insane. And that, you know, along with the dark web goes, you know, the like human trafficking. And I'm not just talking sex trafficking, just human trafficking in general. There's all these, you know, there's thousands of people that are just like off the grid living in like as slaves. Like it just, the more I think about that shit, I just, it gives me such like existential dread, you know? I'm just like,
existential dread.
I'm like, what am I doing? Like, there could be someone, and the more I actually had to like consciously distance myself a lot from back then when I was getting into this, probably 3 or 4 years ago, because I was becoming so paranoid. I was like looking around on the street and anyone that I saw with someone who looked like, I was like convincing myself these people were trafficked. Like I was looking around myself being like, you know, because I was listening to this, I listened to a podcast about a girl who was trafficked and like who was in some form of like, I mean, it was sex trafficking, but you know, there was all these stories about her like walking around with these people who were trafficking her. And she was trying to like, she was so brainwashed and probably Stockholm syndrome was at play. And also like they do things like, you know, drug you up and deprive you of sleep and deprive and like pump you full of fucking who knows what in order so that you're not exactly coherent, you know. But I, you know, there's all these stories and I was just like, I couldn't wrap my head around it, like how this girl was walking around with these slave masters and people were just like, do, you know, that way. And I was like fucking convincing myself I was seeing like full on slaves everywhere. I was like, I have to stop it with the podcast.
You were like, as in the ghost whisperer, but you were just seeing sex trafficked people.
I know. I was
all
like,
over, like O'Connell Street.
I was like, no, I wasn't, but I was close to whispering in people's ears, being like, blink twice if he is your captor. You know? I'm some like mad Elwin on O'Connell Street, being like, he will save you. Get away from him.
Well, another, moving on from the red rooms, okay. So I have a lovely tale. One of my favorite tales from the dark web is a web. And when people are just, for reference, going onto the dark web, it's not like you're typing in, say, www.redroom at whatever.
Yeah.
If you're looking for things, it's a complete random generated mixture of numbers and letters. So it could be like ABLGK57, do you know? That's how you find it. And the websites are constantly changed and recycled. So you have to go, when you go into the dark web, you have to go to some place called, is it Wiki? It's something, it's like WikiLeaks, but it's for the dark web. And it will basically, the store owners will post updated websites. You know, they'll change every couple of days.
They're kind of like once-off URLs, like disposable URLs almost, right? Because, I mean, it's like the level of encryption, obviously, because it's so insanely illegal.
But, like, you can even buy things now, like, for $6 on the dark web, you can buy a permanent Netflix premium account and all that kind of stuff. You can buy like counterfeit money. You can like order a credit card but that has €500 whatever on it and stuff.
A lot of identity fraud, right?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of like fraud. Social security numbers, passports. There was a podcast I used to listen to called Reply All, and it was about internet kind of stuff, and they like ordered a bunch of stuff. Like they were like, they could get like a passport, they could get a social security number, they could get like just the sheer amount of shit that you could get is insane. And that's also leads you to be like, ooh, who's buying that? That's like someone who's away.
It's like the dark web is just full of people with so many interesting stories, you know?
I know, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of pedophiles as well, but there's also some interesting stories. Now, which would bring me back to this website on the dark web called The Cannibal Cafe. Okay. So basically, it's a forum with many posts from people saying that they have killed, cooked, and eaten people. Okay. There's also detailed guides on how to prepare and cook human flesh. And basically, it's a community of people who either have a fetish or desire to eat people or to be eaten themselves. Okay, so it actually, there's one very famous case. I think it's Armand Marvey or Armand Marvis. In 2001, Armand, he was a German computer repair dude, and he went to the site and he posted saying that he was looking for a medium built guy between the ages of 18 and 25 to be slaughtered and consumed. Okay. So in March of that year, a guy called Bernard Bravadis, he was an engineer from Berlin, accepted this post from Armand. And on March 9th, they met. Okay. So we have the two of them. We've Bernard and Armand. They meet. Bernard wants to get eaten. Armand wants to eat. So Bernard calls over to Armand's house. Okay. So this is the 9th of March in 2001. And they agree. So he lies down on a table, but he has a condition that he wants to be alive while he's being eaten. So your man Armand agrees to these conditions. He sets up a video camera to film it all. Bernard's first request about being eaten, and I guess trigger warning should have came beforehand, but if,
I mean, if you've the whole episode,
all
I'm
the
sorry.
Pedophilia and stuff, I'm sure you can manage. He wanted first his penis to be eaten while he was alive. So Armand filled Bernard up with over 20 sleeping tablets and a bottle of cough syrup to kind of put him in some sort of kind of dozing out state or whatever. So Armand goes and cuts off Armand's penis. Bernard is like, oh, I actually want to taste my own penis. So he gives it to your man and he puts it into his mouth and he starts chewing. And he's like, it's actually too tough. I can't do anything with this. I know. I'm like, I can feel my balls puckering as I'm talking.
I'm gagging. So, and not the usual gagging. No. Around a penis.
So because the penis was so tough, Armand had to put the severed penis in the frying pan with some garlic, some onions, pepper and salt, and some red wine, okay? And fried it up. So he'd gone back then to check on Bernard. Bernard was coming in and out of consciousness. He was dozing. So in the end, he'd actually left the penis on the frying pan too long and it burned. So he fed the penis to the dog instead.
Typical okay. white people.
Exactly, 100%. Okay, not appreciative.
The dog
had to eat the penis.
How dare you?
I know, feed it to a little dog. Like your dog behind you. What's your dog's name? Belle?
L,
okay. Okay. Like L eating a penis.
That's so like... Continue.
Oh my god, Elle's ears perked up.
She's like, he knows.
So what happened was Armand had moved Bernard into the bath, had filled up a bath and left him in there, I guess, to soak in his own juices. He was coming in and out of consciousness, and Armand was actually getting frustrated because he wanted to just start hacking away. But he was feeling some type of way about Bernard being in and out of consciousness. So Armand went into the sitting room and was reading one of his favorite Star Trek books, Nerd Alert. And then had come back and had actually gotten tired of waiting for, he was waiting for Bernard to die. So he actually got a knife and started stabbing Bernard in the neck. So Bernard was dead then. He took Bernard's body and put it up in a meat hook in the kitchen. And then over the next 4 hours, hacked the body up and sauteed some bits and chopped it up nicely from all the skills that he learned off the dark web, and now had this body that was ready to be consumed. And he did consume it over the next 3 years. He put it in deep freeze and consumed it over the next 3 years. So what happened was, Armand had gone back onto the dark web, back onto the Cannibal Cafe forum, and posted and was like, you know, shared, I guess, a bit about his exploits and said that he was looking for someone again. So what had happened was people in the Cannibal Cafe forum had started getting worried and feeling some type of way. So they actually narked. They had narked on your man, saying that, oh, something's
that's how
not
you
right.
know that's an all-time low, can we just say,
if you're getting
you're
narked
on the dark
at a cannibal
web
cafe
and the cannibals are concerned.
Exactly, because I guess a lot of the people there is made up of people, I guess, with fetishes and fantasies, but had never had any, you know, desire to carry them out in real life. It was just something that existed in the metaphysical.
It's kind of like a cosplay almost. Like they're like almost like living out their fantasy exactly. through. I listened to a podcast about this once, same that Sword and Scale one. It was actually the only podcast ever of crime that I had to turn off multiple times throughout listening. It was mm-hmm. that disturbing. And it was a similar thing, but it was about children eating them. But oh. And the whole thing was about like reading transcripts between these two people. Now, the people were arrested and all this for, you know, I don't know if they were arrested, but there was no evidence that they had actually done these things. But the detail in which they were talking through fantasy was just so mm-hmm. dark. So like to think that that's what they're doing, they're talking in really explicit terms, is my point. The fact that they were concerned. Oh,
exactly. Exactly. No, he was arrested in 2002 after people narked him out. All right. They had found in his freezer body parts. Like that is, half of it had been consumed. So he'd been eating this, you know, body on the regular. They'd also found the 4-hour footage, which had never been released to the public, of him, you know, cutting up the body and for the whole duration. So in 2004, he was convicted, get this, of manslaughter and was sentenced to 8 years only. So the people were freaking out in the village, in the town, that that this guy lived here and was only getting 8 years for chopping somebody up and consuming them. So the people freaked out anyway, and eventually sparked enough, I guess, public outrage that that Armand was retrialed and eventually sentenced to life in prison, where he became a vegetarian. Yeah.
I've always said vegetarianism is a mental disease, so, you know,
I'm a vegetarian. And while I may be mentally ill, it is just a beautiful thing to do. It's a beautiful gift to the planet.
Mm. With idols like Armand, I protest. No, I'm joking.
No, he was one of you before he became one of us. Okay.
That's so horrifying. I remember the story rang bells, but I completely forgot the like horrific detailing of it. The manslaughter thing is so insane.
It's mad.
It kind of reminds me of, do you remember that, and this is kind of going off topic, but similar. Remember that case a while ago about the girl who was like texting someone and like encouraging them to kill themselves?
Excuse me.
You know that story?
Yeah, I do. Where was she from? She's from the UK.
It was American.
Oh yeah, I remember it anyway, that she basically texted her ex-boyfriend or something just to go and kill himself, and he did it.
Yeah, and then there was a documentary that came out about it, and like they were reading out the text, and it did kind of add so much nuance to the point where it's like, you know, and that goes back to the manslaughter thing. It's like, yeah, this guy wanted, using quotes, air quotes, he wanted to be consumed, but like all we have is his frozen calves to see his level of mental illness. Like,
exactly.
It's like, you know, if someone is suicidal, is that okay for them, for someone to kill them then? You know, that way it's, mm-hmm. And then that just manslaughter, because it wasn't like, I mean, surely that is the epitome of premeditated murder, first degree.
But I think different from the case of the girl who got the boyfriend to kill himself.
Yeah.
Like, I guess this guy, Bernard, had gone with the understanding and I guess this verbal contract that he was going there to die.
Yes, but then it's like,
I mean, it's definitely illegal. Definitely ain't right.
Oh, yeah. But it's kind of like he went with the understanding, but like what was going on with that?
Exactly.
Because like, surely that's like, it's like a severe mental illness. Like you want to be consumed and die. Like that's.
Yeah. And not, it's like, where does that past trauma come from? Where that fetish, because it's definitely a real fetish to cannibalize and to be cannibalized. It's definitely a real fetish. So it's like interesting, where does that stem from or whatever? Mm. But yeah, I mean, all in all, the dark web sounds like this grotesquely beautiful monster. And the thing about the internet is the wild, wild west. You know, it truly is. For all the brilliance that it has, it also has some of, it's like the darkest human capacities and appetites are there as well.
Yeah.
Now, look, is it something, I'd love to go onto the dark web and have a nose about, 100%. I'd like to be doing it with someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. Because like, I would not want to, I think what the thing is like, once you click on something, and if you don't know what it is, especially with these encrypted URLs, and I've seen people on TikTok being like, this is what it looks like. You can see mm-hmm. that on TikTok. People are like, see, and the links are like, some of it's even like illegal streaming of like you can even find just like streams of like fucking probably McGregor fights, you know, that way.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Where there is that kind of shit on there. It is just minimal. But the interesting thing about the dark web is, like, you know, the way the internet, I grew up, like, when I was a teenager, the internet, as I said, there was rotten.com, all these websites that were, like, so, like, horrible.
Black Sheep, I think, was another one.
Yeah, that all, like, live on the dark web now, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, that's the interesting question. It's, like, by shutting down these things on the public internet, are you pushing them further underground? And then by pushing them further underground, are they becoming more deplorable than they ever would have been on the public internet?
Definitely.
You know, it's an interesting question. If you even, like, a lot, a huge thing on the dark web is, like, Nazi forums and mm-hmm. white supremacy and, you know, really dark shit like that, you know?
I remember back in the day, if you Googled how to kill yourself, or if you Googled, not that I was, like, just Googling how to kill yourself, but I guess I had a morbid curiosity. But say, well, if you Googled, like, the most painless ways to kill yourself, as Lana Del Rey plays in the background. you know, just like when you're searching things in your teen angst or whatever. And it's not even that, but it's not even limited to, you know, back in the day, you used to be able to Google, like, oh, what's a cocaine high feel like? And, you know, what's a crack high feel like and stuff. And now when you search those things, so if you were to search, like, easiest ways to kill yourself, now the first things come up today is, it's like just like the first, like, page, and I imagine pages beyond it, is all like Samaritans and all these different health websites and, like, psychology and all this kind of stuff. Never the advice that used to be there. This has obviously been pushed under. The same with all this talk about drugs, the same with, like, the pro-anorexia, like the pro-ana sites and all that, all getting pushed underground. You used to be able to, like, type in pro-ana and you'd be brought to, like, a pro-ana forum and stuff.
Why now?
Yeah. Oh, she's been... Oh, she's been there. She's, like, that's to say, like, are you a friend of Anna?
And Mia?
What's Mia?
Mia's bulimia.
Oh, that's kind of
inventive.
Yeah, it's kind of inventive. Like, I like the way that they'll put a creative twirl on these things. I knew the pro-Anna. Did not know Mia. You're a friend of Mia.
I'm not a friend of Mia.
No, I wasn't asking you if you were a friend of Mia.
But yeah, it was like those websites were so dark. But yeah, I mean, and then it's just an interesting question. You know, it's like, I don't think either of us are saying, like, keep it public. Cause, like, I mean, no, obviously that's a great thing to be, like, if you are Googling those things with suicidal tendencies, to be given access to
absolutely
other resources, you know, especially when you think of, like, children on the internet.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, I mean, I was a teenager on the internet and I was able to find those pro-Anna sites. And, like, I think most people my age found their way onto those websites.
Yeah,
they
100%.
Do. They imprint upon you whether you like it or not. And, like, yeah, it's just an interesting one. You know, it's like, where is the line and who's deciding what to push down and what not to push down? But then once they are underground and on something like Tor or the dark web or whatever, you know, that's the real Wild West. And then there's, like, no line of mm-mm. what's acceptable. And then it's also, like, there's a lot of trolls on the dark web that, like, would be on these websites, like, again, not actually involved in the kind of weird niches or subcultures that they're kind of interacting with, but just kind of doing it to, like, ruffle feathers and maybe push people further into their, like, bigotry or mm-hmm. niche interests, or encouraging people to do things that they maybe usually wouldn't on the normal internet, you know? So it's a weird world. It's fascinating and terrifying in the same sense. The dark web, again, as you said, like, it's something that I'm like, oh my God, what, but then I'm like, is it worth the risk of mm-hmm. what I could see?
But you know what? It's definitely being utilized by the power of good as well. Like, people mm-hmm. who are rebelling against establishment, all of this kind of thing, that is where they're going to be communicating as well and rallying and all that. There's definitely going to be a lot of leaked documents that the governments are trying to hide that are going to be available. So as evil as it is, like anything, there's a good side as well. Oh yeah, so I was watching, right, I was on Traveler TikTok last night. It was like
My dad's always on Traveler TikTok.
It was like 4:30 a.m. And there's these two girls who are part of the traveling community in Ireland that I follow. And they were live. And it was actually very intimate live. There's only like 13 of us there. And people were like, they were getting some small bit of abuse, but they were getting, I posted in abuse. I posted in. And I was like, oh, you girls should, I said, I'd love to see you girls make some TikToks on traveler culture, because that's something that's very interesting to me, something that I know very little about. And I would love to get someone who, you know, has a history of the traveling community onto the podcast. And they were like, they said, or they're like, oh, yeah, we'll make some videos. But they were like, just ask any questions you have away. So I was like, that was very open of them. So there's like 4:30 in the morning last night, I was asking them questions. I was like, do you know, I was like, is there any, like, say, traveler or like holidays that are specifically, you know, just celebrated within the traveling community? And they were like talking openly and like very generous with their information, and they're sharing about traveler customs and this kind of a thing. But then someone had commented on this live stream and was like, oh, I'm here because I got, or I'm here watching you guys because I clicked a link on the dark web.
Ooh, that's creepy.
And the girls didn't say anything about it because I think they weren't really familiar with what the dark web was as a concept, yeah, or whatever.
They're like, dark mode on your phone?
Yeah, exactly. So obviously someone within the dark web was talking about these two girls on some forum or whatever.
And I say, you were like, oh, should I tell them?
Because I knew that me and you were going to be talking about the dark web today. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's fucking weird. Like, weird. Like, obviously someone was like saying, oh, these two traveler women are talking on, but still to find that through the dark web, it had just come up on me as I was swiping through TikTok. It was weird. Now, I will finish up on my mind popper. I won't keep you long, but it's so interesting. And it was actually funny that you mentioned Nazis a couple of minutes ago when we were talking about the dark web. But my mind popper is designer Nazi uniforms. Okay. So I came across this article in the Fashion Spot by Nika Mavrodi. So basically, she was speaking about, she was linking back all of these, she linked back five of these big designer that we know designers today that are celebrated today that all have direct links with the Nazi party. Okay. So I'm going to start off with Chanel. So this is from an excerpt. It was published in 2011. It was called Sleeping with the Enemy, Coco Chanel's Secret War Exposed. So basically this exposed Coco Chanel's activities as a spy for the Third Reich. Okay, so the New York Times review of the book, it opened with, and I'll read this, it's a quote. Gabrielle Chanel, better known as Coco, was a wretched human being, an anti-Semitic, homophobic, social climbing, opportunistic, ridiculously snobbish, and given to the sins of phrase making, like if blonde, use a blue perfume. She was addicted to morphine and actively collaborated with the Germans during the Nazi occupation of Paris. First of all, that sounds like my new Tinder bio. Like, can you imagine, like, Adam O'Reilly, better known as Coco, was a wretched human being, anti-Semitic, homophobic, social climbing, like a 100% morphine addict.
Wearing blue perfume, wearing, yeah, bitch.
But yeah, so that was, I thought it was interesting that Coco Chanel, I did not know that Coco Chanel was actually named Gabrielle Chanel. I guess I'm not really into the world of haute couture.
I've heard of her anti-Semitism, all right, and her, she was a massive Nazi sympathizer. Mm-hmm. From what I heard, I don't know. I've never read into the details of which, but like,
now, that book sounds like something that might be interesting to us.
That sounds good.
Sleeping with the Enemy, Coco Chanel's Secret War. That sounds something. I might look into that and see what the reviews are like, and we can look into that. Next up, okay, in this article, they talked about Cristobal Balenciaga, who had a close relationship to Hitler's ally, General Franco. So Balenciaga designed many dresses for General Franco's wife and even came out of retirement to create a wedding gown for the fascist granddaughter. So the interesting thing during World War II, Hitler was trying to, so in the 1930s, Hitler was trying to get all these big fashion institutions to move, I guess, from Paris, France, wherever, and actually move to Berlin.
He wanted like Berlin, right, to be like the center of culture and Europe, basically.
Now, the one thing I can respect about Balenciaga is, so Hitler had sent five big German men over to Balenciaga to be like, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be moving Balenciaga over to Berlin. And he was like, no, he was like, I can't do it. He was like, you wouldn't. This is my French accent. He was like, you wouldn't take the bulls and ask them to run in Berlin. You know, I would take the bulls from Spain. So I was like, okay, respect, you Nazi sympathizing bastard, Balenciaga. Also, unfortunately, we have Louis Vuitton, whose leather house goods had a strong tie to the Nazi party, and the family's eldest son, Henry Vuitton, I guess, became one of the first Frenchmen to be decorated by the Nazi party for his loyalty and efforts to the regime. We also have two more. We have Christian Dior. Okay, so Dior dressed the wives and mistresses of high-ranking Nazi officers. Now, funnily enough, his sister Catherine, who was Miss Dior, was a member of the Resistance. So respect to her. And then, I guess, which seems to be one of the most incriminating, was finally Hugo Boss.
Yeah, I was waiting for this one.
Yeah, and Hugo Boss actually created the uniforms worn by Hitler Youth. And which was even worse, the company Hugo Boss would source their labor from, I guess, concentration camps and Nazi prisoners in its factories. And then in 2011, Hugo Boss issued an official apology for the company's, I guess, behavior during the Second World War, which I went to click on to find the apology on their website, and they have since removed it.
I mean, I find it kind of like we're really asking them to, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think, but that article literally lists out pretty much every major fashion house being in some way involved with obviously a deplorable regime. No one is ever like, you know, there's no Nazi sympathizers on this podcast, but like, I mean, we're really asking Hugo Boss to apologize for something that, again, like, a huge part of like fascism and with especially like Hitler's Nazi regime was like this, like the visual aspect. Mm-hmm. If you look at like his, what was his architect called again? I studied this in college. God, there's my degree. Sorry, girls. Sorry, Trinity. Can't remember. but he was very, you know, wrapped up in aesthetics. And if you look at pretty much any dictatorship, they are wrapped up in aesthetics because the people have to believe and love in this person that they are allowing dictate their entire country, empire, et cetera, et cetera. Even if you look at North Korea, they are like incredibly well dressed.
Oh, now I saw Kim Jong-un in this flared pantsuit and I was like, oh, come on, Kim. Do you know?
For sure. I mean, and this is like, if you look at like Hugo Boss also, I'm pretty sure designed the uniforms for like the SS as well. Mm-hmm. Those honestly incredibly structured leather trench coats, like, and the reason like I say incredible and fashionable is because like they had to instill such authority, a horrendous authority. Oh, like, let's be, you know, let's have it known. But you know, people, the wrap of aesthetics was like intertwined within their authority and their authoritarianism and power, and also this like projection of Germany being this incredible superior race that the SS were part of, this Aryan Brotherhood, not Aryan Brotherhood, that's the modern one, but like they were Aryans, they were this like, you know, the supremacist race, you know. So what other way to get that across, an effective way to get that across, but with like powerful aesthetics. So it is interesting. What do you think about that, like demanding an apology from the Boss now?
I guess first of all, it's important to probably say that during these circumstances, especially when it was Nazi occupied France, that I imagine in a lot of these circumstances, it was like, you do this or you die, you know?
Oh,
you,
for sure.
Yeah, with the exception probably of Gabrielle Coco Chanel, who seemed all about that Nazi life.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's like, well, it's well documented.
100%. It would have.
If anything, extremely anti-Semitic.
Yeah. And you know what? I suppose that in regards to like demanding an apology or whatever, you see, I don't know, because I completely understand what you're saying. But I think, like, with the Nazi Party being, like, one of the biggest evil things in the public eye, plenty of things we could correlate to things that we don't see. I think that that leaves any association with that, even though the people, you know, who are, you know, working and saying Hugo Boss today were probably not even alive during this time. I think it's just such, it's almost like a stain on the soul. That
it is.
For me as a business owner, I'd want to come forward and almost try to expel that from myself, from the spirit or the soul of the brand, you know?
I for sure get that. And I obviously understand that, like, if it had never been a public, like, distancing, but I do kind of find it gets like, okay, I you know, are we asking this from Volkswagen, people's car made by Hitler, like, for the car of the German people?
We probably should.
Have they come out? But, do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, or are we, you know, banging down, wasn't it Eamon de Valera, the only world leader who sent a letter of sympathy to Germans when Hitler killed himself? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like our state, you know? I mean, and of course, I understand Hugo Boss, but I do kind of find it like a bit like, you know, splitting of hairs as well. It's like, I mean, how many people really, did we really think that what they were still cutting away the little Hitler youth outfits,
but you know? I think, you know what, it's like, what kind of, I doesn't sit right with me is, would these institutions have become the titans that they are today without that Nazi endorsement back in the day? If you get,
yeah, because I'm like, are they, sure, is it pretty
blood,
sure
is it blood diamonds, you know?
Yeah, like, and I'm not 100% sure on the history of Hugo Boss, but I do think that, like, it was a direct correlation. And obviously the main thing that I 100% understand the public distancing from is because, like, it's blood money, right? It's literally, like, you literally, like, you made, it's not that you were only, you were in charge of the creative director of how Hitler looked, or Eva Braun, or whatever, whoever the fuck was wearing your clothes. You also were, like, using imprisoned people in, like, you know, one of the greatest, like, mass fucking genocides ever, to make the clothes of the young Aryan children dancing around and frolicking in the Nazi propaganda film. So I understand it from that perspective. But I just, my main thing is, like, it's not a secret. It's not like they were like, you know, that way. It was like a document. I would get it more if it was a document that came out that no one knew of.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Are you serious? But, like, I'm pretty, I get it. I understand it. I understand it from both sides, as in, like, it's incredibly embarrassing because they were probably, like, really proud of that for a long time, you know?
Exactly. Well, look, to be fair, it seems like now in fashion that there is a movement away from these big designer brands.
Yeah.
So, sure. I mean, yeah. So let the pendulum swing that way. Actually, very interesting. Funny. I was just on Google a couple of weeks ago, and, like, obviously I'm from Cove in Cork, came across this old picture in Cove. Okay. And a lot of Cove, when you look at old pictures, a lot of the buildings, like, say, within the town are hundreds of years old. I mean, they may not look 100 years old. They've been kind of done up or whatever. But, like, it's easy to see where you are in the town when you look at, like, a photo from, like, 100 years ago to where you'd be in the town now. It's, you know, a lot of the same buildings and stuff. And what did they have only flying was a big Nazi flag. Nazi flag. And you know what? Obviously, the Nazis must have came, you know, used to the port, because we've the second biggest natural harbour in the world. So obviously the Nazis must have docked at one point, and obviously the people of Cove were like, welcome Nazi soldiers.
But Irish people, like, freaked for the Nazis.
Yeah. And you know what? It's just funny because I don't know if you ever watched Parks and Recreation.
I did, yeah.
So if you remember, there was an episode where they talk, they live in Pawnee, and they used to have the history of Pawnee. So they were talking about every time the town's name has been changed was when they felt threatened. So they changed it to side with whoever they felt threatened. So that was like with Cove. It was like, Cove would like change the name. Yeah, it's like, welcome Nazi soldiers. And then like, you know, a couple of years later, it changed the name. It's like, welcome Taliban soldiers, you know?
I'm imagining like Cove, you know, like Cove is spelled C-O-B-H. Imagining Cove, C-O sharp S-H, you know, that like, sharp S they use in Germany.
Literally.
Like, this is how we spell it.
Yeah, it was like, it was literally about self-preservation, you know?
Irish people are such sneaks, aren't they? You know? But yeah, there was a big Nazi sympathizer movement, I think, but that it came from the whole British thing, which is like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly. And I can understand that, I don't know at all the history of the relationship between Ireland and Nazi Germany, but
you should look into it.
I will, definitely, after I've seen the fucking Cove flying the Nazi flag. But I can totally understand, like, even in like social interaction, like if you fall out with someone in a big way, you suddenly find yourself gravitating towards someone who you know is on the outs with that person.
Yeah, and I think it's like by our alliance with fucking or like even symbolic alliance with Nazi Germany, it just shows just how toxic that could end up. You know, it's like woo, go Germany,
welcome
like
Nazi soldiers.
Like, do you know we were like the only country to send a letter of condolence?
Really?
Like, or at least one of the only. We sent a letter of fucking condolence. Being like, we're so sorry that Mr. Hitler took his own life. Incredibly sorry.
Well, I suppose, look, people will do crazy things in the name of self-preservation.
True.
We're coming to the end of the show. We're recording for an hour and 30. It flew, to be honest.
It did. What a way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
What a way to spend a Saturday. I need to get up and get dressed and get showered and say hello to the world.
Same. It's, you know, at least we've got a few more hours of brightness now.
I know. Well, you know what? I want to go for a walk, and I was meant to go for a walk yesterday, but by the time I was awake, it was pissing rain. And they said, right, that I was reading an article last night just to finish up on, that said that with coronavirus and stuff, are the weather apps being deliberately manipulative to say if it's going to be like a scorcher at the weekend? Are they deliberately saying it's going to be pissing to stop people from like making these plans about going out with a bag of cans?
Oh, like I was only talking to people about this yesterday. I remember even this in the first fucking lockdown. It was like 80% rain all day. Yesterday was like a beautiful day.
Yeah, and yesterday like, it was supposed to be pissing. Oh, no, but it wasn't in Cove. Cove was lashing yesterday.
Oh, was it? Dublin was like fucking beautiful. And I was like, oh, it's going to rain all day. There's no point in making plans. And I'm like, oh my God, it's working. Ah.
We get it. No, we get the weather in from the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't because I don't know.
You are on the Atlantic Ocean, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Well then. Okay, we will leave it there. Thank you, everybody. See you in hell.
See you in hell.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.